Let the games begin.
Carnage. Carnage.
My name is Khan.
Hello, world. This is Hassan Khan, back with you again on the Carnage podcast. And how are you doing? I'm so sorry, it's been a while since we last spoke. And if you haven't checked out the first episode, then where have you been? Because that first episode, we flew straight into India, virtually of course, and spoke to the Princess of India 2016-17, Simran Chawla. So check that episode out. Honestly, I'm really grateful to all of you for your feedback, your Facebook comments, etc. Now, there are some comments that I want to address quickly. This one says, Hassan, why don't you sing a Bollywood song on your next podcast episode? Not happening. Do you understand? It's never going to happen. Well, never say never, as the great man Justin Bieber once said. This one says, Hassan, you're so serious. I don't think you're like that in real life. Okay, let me tell you something. There are people and mothers listening to this potentially in India, Palestine, Pakistan. What do you want me to do? Be silly? I've always said to people, look, of course, I adapt to different ways of living. I have different sides to me. And if you want the fun side, come for a coffee with Hassan Khan in Southwest London. And yeah, it'll be fun. But you know what? I'm here to tackle serious issues, fun issues. I'm here to tackle anything that's thrown at me. Now, the amazing thing is, the second story, and it's a pure coincidence, by the way, sort of falls in line with what we spoke about first time. Honestly, it's not deliberate. Anyways, look, wherever you're getting this podcast from, and I don't care where it is, as long as you're commenting, subscribing, and liking, and all those good stuff. Of course, Apple, Google, YouTube, wherever you are, welcome, warm welcome. And today's story really is special, and I'm probably going to say that so many times, and I genuinely mean it, because I don't think I've ever spoken to someone from Palestine who's visually impaired and living in Palestine in a volatile land. I mean, look, I think Palestine is a subject that isn't spoken about for one reason or another. It's a subject we kind of do not speak about. It's a taboo subject. And look, what's happening in Ukraine, it is absolutely horrible. I totally condemn what Russia are doing. But you have to remember, this is also happening in Yemen. It's happening in Syria, Sudan, Palestine, but we don't tend to cover it. But today I am joined on the line by a young lady from Palestine who didn't just lose her sight as a child, but grew up under the constraints, restrictions of Palestine, and just like the first story, made it out, is by her own right a very successful human being. Well, without further ado, as the kids say, why don't we just dive straight into it and go over to Palestine. And I'm, of course, joined on the line by the wonderful human that is Amira Abu Arakoub. Welcome, Amira. And look, I'm really looking forward to the chat. But firstly, how are you?
Hi, well, thank you so much. And I'm glad to be here with you today.
Now, pleasure having you, Amira. And as I said in my introduction, your story kind of falls in line and matches that of Simran Chawla from India. Now, you're, of course, all the way in Palestine. Amira, I believe that you were born blind. Take me back to how that happened and tell me a little bit about how that affected you.
So I was born with sight problems, but then like these sight problems went like worse and worse till I lost my sight. But I lost my sight when I was a baby, so I don't remember anything. I don't know how you say that, medical mistake, like when a doctor make a mistake. Like,
so the doctors made a mistake.
Yeah, so they were supposed to do something, but they did something else. So a doctor made a mistake, then it led to loss in my sight. So right now, I'm totally blind. Yeah.
Right, so you're totally blind. I mean, I don't know. This seems to be a huge coincidence, but in the first episode of this podcast, it was also a slight medical error or a coincidence that led to Simran's blindness. So by this point, when you had lost your sight, did your parents have other boys and girls? Did you have other siblings?
Yeah, I have two brothers and one sister, but I'm the only blind member in the family.
Okay, so look, you've lost your sight to a medical error.
Yeah, so first of all, I'd like to start talking about this with something that maybe 2 years ago or 3 years ago, I was sitting with my mom and I asked her a question. I told her, did the doctors tell you that the baby you will bring to this world will be a person with any kind of disability? So she told me, yes, they told me that the baby will have a kind of disability, but it wasn't obvious what kind of disability. So I was like, okay, I have a question. And I insisted on her to know the answer of that question. So I asked her, did doctors tell you not to bring me to this world? And did people tell you that? So she said, yeah, they told me that. Actually, she didn't want to give me that answer, but I insisted on her to give me the answer. So she said, yeah, everybody told me that, but I kept saying that this thing is a gift from God and I will always be happy and thank God. I made it as a joke. I keep always saying that I came to this world even if nobody wanted me to come. So for my parents, of course, it was hard. Of course, it will be hard and hard to accept and hard to understand and hard to adapt. And so it wasn't easy, but then my mother always believed that I should have a life like any child. And till these days, whenever I go in discussions with her, if I said about something, it's because of the disability, she always tells me not everything is related to the disability. Like a lot of people don't have disability and they face obstacles or they face challenges. So my mom believed that I'm a human before I'm a person with disability. So since I was very, very young, and before it's the time for me to go to kindergarten and to school, she was taking me to different schools that are specialized in teaching blind people. And she was comparing which school is better. And then she found a school which is located in Beit Hanina. It's in Jerusalem. Although it was hard to move between the West Bank and Jerusalem as a result of the barriers that the Israeli occupation put in front of us as Palestinians. But my mom kept insisting that I should learn and that this is a better place for me. So she was taking me to this school every day, and we were passing the checkpoints. And I still remember, although I was a kid, but I still remember that sometimes they didn't allow my mom to enter the checkpoint with me. And they kept telling her, you can call her teacher or somebody from the school to come and take her. And the same happens when she was coming back to pick me up from the school. They were telling her, you cannot get in, tell somebody to get her, to help her getting out, and then you can take her. So it wasn't easy, but with the determination from my mom, I could learn. And in that school, I learned how to use my cane, how to read and write Braille, how to be an independent person, and how to depend on myself. And I gained a lot of life skills. And then it was the time for me to move to a different school where I have to be integrated in society with other colleagues who don't have any kind of disability. And it was a very success journey for me. I believe it was one of the big reasons that make me who I am today, and which affected my personality and my thinking and my accepting for everybody and for everything, and how to be better socializing with other people.
I'm gonna come in here. I always sound shocked, but if you think about this really carefully, I mean, I live in England and I speak and converse with people from the USA, Europe, Asia. None of us going to school have to pass checkpoints none of us have such difficulties where we think, oh my God, today my mum might not be allowed to come and pick me up because of my religion, because of my culture, because of the checkpoints. That is crazy. To me, listening to that, that is crazy. If my mum is late by 5 minutes, I'm like, oh my God, why can't she be on time? What's wrong with people? What's wrong with the world? Yet you, you guys are coping with it when you've got checkpoints. Did that cause you anxiety at that age? Did you understand what was going on?
So, yes, I remember it was like when I was a kid, it took me time to understand. Like, I always was asking, like, when I was hearing the Israeli soldiers talking to each other, or maybe to us as Palestinians, like, who are trying to pass the checkpoints, like, I always was asking and wondering one thing, like, why they are shouting. And so at that time, my mom, of course, didn't give me an answer, but the only thing she was telling me is, don't worry, they talk like this. And it was like hard for me, and I was scared when I passed when I was passing the checkpoints. But then I remember one of my mom's friends was helping her to pick me up from the school in one day in which the Israeli occupation prevented her from passing the checkpoints. And so my mom called her friend to pick me up from the school and so that I can meet her outside of the checkpoints. And my mom's friend told me that day, she told me, you see, we've passed and nothing happened, and they can do nothing for us.
I'm sorry, but I just don't know where to go with this interview, because parts of me is feeling proud, parts of me is feeling emotional, but a lot of me is feeling anger, because we don't understand this. This is why I said at the beginning, Amira, that we don't talk about this. Look, you've gone to different schools. You are now going to a school that's full of sighted pupils. What was people's attitude in your country towards people who have a disability, who can't see?
So, okay, I can say that people's attitudes differ from, like, one to another. So some people will talk to you as because they only want to help you. Some people talk to you because they feel, like, kind of sad for you. And some people talk to you because they really want you to be their friend, and they really want to talk to you, and they don't even give the idea of disability or the fact of disability like any attention. Like, they treat you as a human, not as a person with disability, and they try as much as possible to avoid talking about disability unless you talk about it, or you give them the permission to talk about it, or you tell them, I'm okay with my disability, or you start making jokes or something.
Tell me about your teachers. So I asked this to everyone studying outside the UK. Tell me how your materials and your study papers were produced. Did they produce Braille for you? How does it work in a mainstream school?
When I was in the school that have sighted people, and I was the only blind student there, so it was like there was a need for a cooperation between my school, my parents, and the Ministry of Education in Palestine. My mom had to go to the people with disability office that is responsible for printing books for blind people, and she had to take the books from there. So there was another option that my mom can wait for the Ministry of Education offices to provide me with books directly, connect with my school, not with her. But my mom wanted me to have the books as earlier as possible.
So, okay, let me fast track you now. So you've been through different schools, checkpoints, you've gone into college, you made it into university. What did you study? What was your degree in? And what was that like in comparison to the school and college?
Okay, so I studied English literature, minor translation at Bir Zeit University, which is in Ramallah, in Bir Zeit. And actually, this was one of my dreams since I was a child, and all my teachers were supporting me to go to study English. So it was a very amazing feeling for me that I'm making one of my dreams true and I'm studying English literature, and particularly in that university. My experience at university gave me the chance to meet more people, like from different villages, cities in Palestine. Also, I've been participating in like more activities. So the university opened me like more prospects and more opportunities. And right now I feel like I'm getting more chances because the activities I was involved in.
Take me to where you are now. I believe just before we started recording, you were telling me you've just got a new job. So congratulations. And tell me who that is with and what you're doing.
I'll work as a person who offer a help desk service for people with disability. And my responsibility is to help people with disabilities to have a better integration in the labor market, whether in helping them finding job opportunities or gaining new skills or getting internship opportunities or maybe volunteering opportunities. And also I have to be in a connection with institutions, foundations, organizations to make the work environment suitable for people with disabilities, with taking in consideration the type of disability. Like if a person has needs to use a wheelchair, I have to make sure that this institution or foundation or whatever suitable for his needs. So I have to make sure that the place matches the people's needs, whether in the physical adaptation or even with the environmental adaptation and the social adaptation. This job is with Educate. It's an Italian institution that works in the field of disabilities in different countries around the world.
That's amazing. In a land of war, difficulty, bloodshed, you have lost your sight due to a medical error. You've gone through different schools. You've faced adversity. You then get an English degree, which is phenomenal, and now you find yourself in employment. Surely you understand that people around the world listening to this will be like, wow, we are absolutely nothing. This young lady is something special. What do you think kept you going? Like, there must have been times in your life when you thought, I want to give up. I want to sit at home. What kept you going?
Oh, thanks for this question. I always like when I've been asked this question in interviews. So, of course, like any person, I have like some moments where I feel, as you said, like it's enough. I don't want to do it anymore. Like I want to do nothing simply. But I think first of all is my mom, because I feel like because of my mom worked so hard because of me. So I feel I have to let her see the fruits of this hard work. The other thing is that people around me, like when I was at the university, so every day I had somebody who comes and tell me, you give me positive energy. Or even people with disabilities, they keep saying, we take the positive energy from Amira. So these words keeps me thinking that there's something that I have to do. I have a message and there's a mission for me. And God sent me for a mission, which is to help people and to give them this positive energy. So whenever I feel like I want to give up, I remember all of these people. This leads me to another thing, which is that because of this, I'm thinking of doing my master's degree in psychology, because I think that will help more people.
I'm laughing because every time I talk to people like you, I'm always left inspired, and there's no ending to what you want to achieve. Look, you talk about God, Amira. Now, this question, please don't get me wrong, I'm asking because there will be some people in the world, when they are left with no sight, when they are born in a land of contention and political unrest, maybe they blame God. Maybe they blame the higher being. What has kept you so, I guess, what has kept your faith so strong and believing in God? And has there been moments when you thought, God, why did I lose my sight as a female growing up in Palestine?
I think I'll answer this question with one word, first of all, then I'll speak more. But I think it's all about satisfaction. My acceptance for my disability is one of the reasons that didn't get me to a point where I ask that question, why God made me blind, or why God made me live in Palestine, for example, or why God chose Palestine to be occupied, for example. Actually, also, I love that I'm blind. And another thing is that I loved listening to Quran when my mom was reading it since I was a child. And then I tried to memorize and to recite more and more. And so it keeps me in connection with religion and with faith. Also, another thing that I'd like to talk about is that my journey in religion was a little bit different, or this is how I think, because I think that I prayed because I wanted to pray, not because my parents or my teachers told me to pray.
The last episode, I honestly, please do go and listen to Simran Amira, because she always talked about her mum as well. And there's a lot of, not just blind people, but people generally thanking their mothers and fathers for what they've done. It can't have been easy for your mum. She must have faced so many things that she didn't tell you, especially when she was dashing around the country through checkpoints trying to get you. I guess this is a bit of a difficult question, but I know she's not expecting you to repay her love, because love is unconditional.
Yeah.
What do you think, how do you think that your mum sees you now? And of course she's proud of you. How do you think you have repaid that love?
She always tells me that your success wasn't only for you, it was for me as well. Because when you succeed, I succeeded with you.
Look, this is a new podcast, so I don't have hundreds or thousands of listeners. But if you're listening to this, I honestly, Amira, people who know me, they know I can talk for Asia. I talk so much, but I have to keep muting myself, and because I'm overawed by this so far, what you've had to say. I'm going to say one thing, and that is just thank you, not just to your mum, but to every mother out there for what they do, because it's amazing. I'm sighing because it's actually a very difficult but a proud interview. I can't wait to put this together. Can we talk about something even more serious now, and that is the land that has been occupied? You use that word. Do you believe Palestine has been occupied, and what has been your thoughts growing up, and how have these thoughts developed?
For me, and not only for me, but also for any Palestinian, we believe that Palestine is occupied, and we believe in our right to live in our country freely without having borders, checkpoints, or at least with having borders that we control over them, not that somebody control over our borders, whether in Palestine itself, among the cities, or even between Palestine and other countries. So we believe in the right that we have to be the controllers on our borders, on our water resources, on electricity, on every single thing.
Look, some of these questions are going to be stupid because I don't understand the layout of the land. So when you go out shopping or buying food, what restrictions are there on you? Are there soldiers on the streets? What is it like living in Palestine? I want you to be honest, and I want you to tell me what it's like, because I want to be able to feel that.
This is the case in some of the cities, particularly Jerusalem, because Jerusalem is a place where all people want to go there, as there's the Al-Aqsa Mosque and Al-Qiyamah Church as well. So, for example, this Ramadan, we weren't able to visit Jerusalem. A lot of Palestinians went, but for me, I was like worried about what's happening, because this Ramadan was really bad on us as Palestinians. Like, we had a lot of martyrs. There was a lot of provoking for our emotions as Muslims and as Palestinians due to the Israeli settlers' actions inside of Al-Aqsa Mosque. I really wanted to go to visit Al-Aqsa Mosque during Ramadan. But it was like those fears, like, how about if the Israeli soldiers entered Al-Aqsa Mosque, and sometimes they throw like bullets, and so people start running, and so this will be hard.
What about your city? How much trouble is there? Do you hear guns and bombs? Do you go out with your cane? Do you feel safe? What is it like?
I live in Ramallah. Usually what we hear is troubles among the Palestinian youth and the Israeli soldiers in a closed checkpoint.
Despite all your achievements and your struggles, where do you see yourself in the next 5 years, 10 years? What do you want to achieve?
One of the most important goals for me that I want to really focus on is to launch like my own business, which is related to a skill that I have, which is voiceover. So I wish I can have my own business where I can create stories for children. And I want these stories to be sending important messages and that plant important values and important thoughts in children's minds. Because for me, I see that all of the channels, or I don't want to say all, like most of the channels, or whether YouTube channels or TV channels, they offer for children fun like videos or fun stories, but most of them, they don't have this important value. So my aim is to have this big, it's like business and also social responsibility or cultural responsibility, let's say. So I aim to write different books. One of them will be about me talking, like about my life, and about like, it won't be like a biography. It will be like talking about my relationship with every single thing that I have a relationship with right now, like my relationship with music, my relationship with praying, my relationship with my family, with children. So it will be like essays, but in a book. Also, I aim to write a book that talks about like social advice for people from my point of view and from my social experience. I don't know if I can achieve it in the upcoming 10 years, but I aim to launch the largest organization that helps poor people in Africa and Latin America.
Where does that interest come from? Is that from going to university with different people from different cities and villages? Where does that stem from?
You mean establishing the organization that help poor people?
Correct.
So establishing the largest organization that helps poor people in Africa and Latin America came from different places, but I remember when I was at school. So once we watched the movie, and the movie was about Africa, and my colleague was sitting next to me, and she was explaining to me how much hard situations people in Africa live under, as the movie shows. And also it's because I have my aunt who lives in Latin America, particularly in Nicaragua, and I know how much hard the situation is there.
Anybody listening to this, you need to listen and rewind that. Because look, somebody who is living under a hardship is now wanting to improve the quality of life for other people in other continents. if that's not something to be celebrated, then I don't know what is. So look, Amira, I know I've taken a lot of your time. Thank you for that. I just want to be able to give you this platform to tell anybody, either struggling or not struggling, your words of wisdom, your words of inspiration.
When any person looks for a treasure, he has to dig very hard in the ground. And we as people and as individuals are need to look very hard for our treasures, because everybody has a treasure inside of him. And the more you look harder inside of you, you'll find your treasure and you'll find the special thing in you. So everybody has something special, but not everybody has started to look for his special thing. So start looking for your special thing and start looking for your treasure.
That's amazing. The biggest hero, the biggest inspiration has to come from within before you can help the world. And I think that's where you are a very special person. And I think you've already been successful, and I think you will be successful. I want to thank you for coming on to this podcast, and I hope that you'll share it with your friends and family, because they know you're special, but for you to put it into words, it's exceptional. And I know this much, I've interviewed 30, 40, 50 different people, and whatever you've said has come from the heart, and that's how it has to be. So you've been listening to the Carnage podcast on Apple, Acast, Google, and YouTube. So please do comment, subscribe, and give us 5 stars wherever possible. Amira, that was an amazing chat. I hope to have you again on the podcast, and perhaps you can come on and host an episode with myself. Thank you so much for your time, and I hope that you not only continue to inspire women and men of Palestine, but indeed of the world.
Thank you so much.
I'll be back.
Sounds about right.